The summer movie season is in full swing, with blockbuster hopes hanging on every release. In a crowded field of weekly offerings, two films, one a dystopian action movie and the other a gleeful look at the world of a cappella competition singing, make for one of the more interesting pairings in recent memory. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. To discuss Mad Max Fury Road and Pitch Perfect 2, I'm happy to have Kyle Alvarado, digital media manager at the El Paso Times and an astute cinephile, back on the program. Good morning, Kyle.
Morning, Chuck. Thank you for having me.
Great to see you. Well, let's get right after it. We both watched Pitch Perfect 2. So the sequel actually outshone the original, at least at the box office.
Yes, in the first 3 days. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the film was in heavy rotation in cable, and it found a huge audience in home video, which sort of gave it its classic status.
Yeah,
it's slightly disappointing to say that the movie doesn't match the original. A lot of it sort of hinges on the plot, which is somewhat contrived, given the fact that the film opens with the national embarrassment, and they sort of shoehorn this world competition to bring them back into their good graces.
And this is a very niche world we're talking about, the world of college competitive a cappella singing.
It's ridiculous. But it's fun, and part of the enjoyment is watching the women interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And Anna Kendrick and Rebel Wilson, who were in the original film, continue to be sort of driving forces in this one. But a nice addition is Hailee Steinfeld, who made a big splash with True Grit. Mm-hmm. And you get the sense that they're grooming her for future films, because this will clearly become a franchise.
Pitch Perfect 3 on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. Pitch Perfect 4, senior year.
Yeah, it was... I did not have the benefit of seeing the original film, but I knew of its cult status already. This was one of those odd films for me where it was hard to pick apart, but it just didn't quite work.
Yeah.
Everything about it is very adequate. It's very workmanlike in its presentation. Elizabeth Banks, who is directing, and the screenplay was written by Kay Gannon, two women, and focusing on all women. I thought that was actually the refreshing story about Pitch Perfect 2 in this crowded field of action films this summer, to have a film that is largely about women, where the male characters are basically second fiddle. And they're in support of the women. The women find their own way. They work out their own problems. Mm-hmm. They're not reliant in any way on a male status quo for acceptance or to overcome their problems.
Yeah, and there's a love interest in the film, but I like that the character in that story sort of takes it on her own terms, and she doesn't just run out to the guy.
I don't know about you, but I kept thinking watching the film about a much older film, Christopher Guest's A Mighty Wind, which is Christopher Guest, the writer, director, and actor who specializes in mockumentaries about these kinds of worlds. And that particular film is about folk singers. It makes fun of them. It's funny, but it has a real heart to it. And there was never any of those moments I found where I was engaging with these characters and really caring whether they solve their problems. Though I will say that Elizabeth Banks, who makes a cameo in the film, comes out from behind the director's chair. Her scenes actually have a very improvisational energy to them that work that is missing from the rest of the film.
Yeah. Well, it helps that she is paired with John Michael Higgins,
who
sort of cut his teeth with the Christopher Guest films.
Right.
And they have this wonderful rapport. And I would rather – it'd be interesting to see the DVD commentary of them commentating in character for the film.
Yeah.
I think that'd be kind of entertaining.
Well, again, the takeaway for me was that props for putting a film like this out in the middle of a crowded summer, where many of the action films are rightly critiqued for not knowing what to do with their female characters, if they even have female characters. And here we get an entire film about women and filled with women.
Yeah, so it's a powerful message. Yeah. My one sort of, since we're comparing it to A Mighty Wind, there wasn't a kiss at the end of the rainbow type song. They tried it with their finale song, but it just didn't have the impact that
Even the musical selections and the way they were shot and edited just lacked energy. You know, you think that those big performance moments and numbers would be, you know, if anything, pull the whole film up. And, and for me, they just mostly fell flat.
Yeah. Just got from one scene to the other. But
competent film, maybe wait for video?
I think so.
Okay. Speaking of women, though, and women in films, what a strange pairing. We get the fourth Mad Max film this came out last Friday with the opening of Pitch Perfect 2. For those who don't know the Mad Max trilogy, this is one of those unusual sequels that took 30 years to come around. This was, if you can turn your dials back to 1979 when the original Mad Max came out, made a star of Mel Gibson, put its director George Miller on the map, both Australians. This incredible action film, little low-budget film that spawned two sequels in the 80s, solidifying Mel Gibson's action status. About a post-apocalyptic world, we're never quite sure how the Earth has been ruined, but it's been ruined, and society is in free fall and falling apart, and this lone anti-hero. But what set those movies apart from a lot of the fare at the time was the car-based and just driven pacing of those films and the incredible speed and energy that those films had. And amazingly, George Miller, who's 70 now, has outdone the originals with this latest film. I think that's what most commentators are talking about, is just the incredible stunt work in this film.
It's absolutely stunning. What I liked about it was that it had this wonderfully stripped-down narrative, and within, I guess it was within the first 5 minutes, you had this insane set piece.
Well, the whole film is like a two-hour chase.
Basically,
it almost never stops. There are a few brief pauses. But it's as if at 70, Miller is looking ahead and seeing where the logical extrapolation of our current action films are, where oftentimes the story feels like it's just getting in the way of what the filmmaker really wants to do, which is just the fights. Mm-hmm. And so from the very get-go, the credits roll, this thing is just on adrenaline and hyper-fueled. Mel Gibson does not return for this film. Tom Hardy, the very capable British actor. But most of the film is filled out with Australians, shot in Australia, so it has all the wonderful feelings of the original film. One of the refreshing things, though, is Charlize Theron, who's in the film, not as a sidekick to Mad Max, Tom Hardy's character, but almost eclipses him as the driving force of the film. And in unison with our discussion of Pitch Perfect, it's fascinating how Miller focuses so much of the film on the feminine power, where those first three films and so much of the world he describes in this latest film is run under masculine power, the power of destruction, these incredibly overbuilt vehicles that are just racing 90 miles an hour after their prey on the open desert. You know, this is a very tough male-centered world that Charlize Theron shall we say, rescues a harem.
I think so, yeah.
and sets in motion all of the events. And it's ultimately really the women who bring about the narrative energy to the film and also the resolution at the end. And if I have a critique, it's despite all the amazing set pieces and action sequences, which are perhaps some of the best ever filmed, if you leave the theater feeling a little bit hollow, it's that Mad Max, you begin to wonder whether or not this shouldn't have been just about Charlize Theron. And they could have taken this all the way to its logical extreme, which is to ditch Mad Max altogether.
Yeah.
He still seems like a cipher to me in the film. There's very little evidence of what his story is if you don't know the previous three films from 30 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. I read somewhere that they're going to do three other sequels to it, and I think, right?
Perhaps Tom Hardy will speak in those.
Maybe. Or you know, in a perfect world, they'll just completely just phase Mad Max out, and they'll just focus on Charlize Theron's character.
Mm. You know, I have to say, though, that one of the fascinating things about this film is that all of the amazing elements that make up cinema, which generally create the context for a narrative, are front and center, and you talked about how stripped down the narrative is. There's very little actual verbal storytelling going on here. There's very little dialogue. It is almost 2 hours of nonstop action, but you look at the costume design, the art direction, the production design, the design of these vehicles that everyone's driving.
Stunning.
Literally, the stories are written in the clothing, on the bodies, in all of the details. It's visual storytelling to the extreme. Mm-hmm. And for that, you know, I think it's highly recommended for people to go and see. This is something that I imagine on multiple viewings, people will get more and more depth of understanding of this world just because there's such a rich palette of materials to learn from.
Yeah. Speaking of depth, did you see it in 2D or 3D?
I did see it in 2D.
Me too.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll play well in 3D. I George Miller suggests that you watch it in 2D, and I think it works better. The colors are more vibrant. 3D tends to wash that stuff out, and I would recommend that people see it in 2D.
A lot of this is shot in the heat of the day on the open desert. There's deep, deep and blazing yellows cast on everything. And then the night scenes are these incredibly saturated blues that those who know their silent film history will be – it felt like very reminiscent of the hand tinting that used to happen in the silent film period. It's just gorgeous to look at. Again, where there's so much detail lavished on all of these characters, that Mad Max seems to come off, for me at least, as a bit of a mystery, just you know, who he is as a character. So small qualm with the film.
I likened his performance a lot to the similar one in The Drop, where he was a man of little words. You didn't get a lot of understanding of his character. And so I appreciated that in a weird way, because it seems to be what Tom Hardy's doing. He likes to just sort of fall behind and just service the plot of the film.
Other recommendations, lots of other things out, also streaming and DVDs and home video and lots of ways to watch movies today.
Well, currently Ex Machina is playing in theaters, and I have been selling this movie like crazy for weeks now.
I know you've been talking about it a lot. Sci-fi film, sort of different from the usual.
Completely different. It's almost like a Frankenstein. It's a 21st century Frankenstein with the sensibilities of Steven Spielberg's AI, artificial intelligence, but it takes it to a much darker place and a much more interesting place.
And a main female character that's really fascinating.
She's incredible to watch.
It's the theme of the week, I guess. Women power. Trend in these films? Are we going to start seeing more films with substantial parts for women, or is this just a fluke?
No, I hope so. I mean, it's, I think they give more interesting characters, and I don't know. When you see movies like The Avengers, you think, what else is there?
Right.
And when you see the disservice to Black Widow and...
Well, my pick is, you know, we're often talk about today being a new golden age for television and the premium series. You know, for decades, Masterpiece Theater on PBS was the high watermark of great television. And they just put out this great miniseries called Wolf Hall that just completed a few weeks ago. It's just out on DVD. You can still watch it streaming for free on PBS.org, but it's set in the 1520s in England in the time of King Henry VIII, whose wandering eye, you know, makes him want to annul his marriage, which sets in motion this conflict with the Catholic Church that will lead to the establishment of the Church of England. I mean, it's just this huge societal change all centered around this king's wanting to get out of his marriage. And at the heart of it is this amazing character, Thomas Cromwell, historical character, who's the son of a blacksmith who rises up to be the king's main advisor and how he navigates this world. You would not think a 16th century period drama would be gripping. It is. I highly recommend it. Kyle, it's always great to talk movies with you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Chuck.
I've been discussing recent films and recommended shows with Kyle Alvarado, digital media manager at the El Paso Times. Mad Max Fury Road, Pitch Perfect 2, and Ex Machina are all in local cineplexes still. And PBS has just completed miniseries Wolf Hall is available for streaming at PBS.org, Amazon, and was just released on DVD. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.